out there in music video land, welcome to another episode, the fourth episode of your favorite podcast, the Music Video Chats podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Doug, your favorite podcast host, and I host this podcast, and normally I have someone with me, but this week I don't. This week I'm flying solo hosting this show. No band leader, no co-host. I don't even have my mom on speakerphone listening in to make sure I'm not making any mistakes. Just me. But of course, because this is the Music Video Chats podcast, we do have an awesome guest. And this week we've had someone on the podcast who we've talked to a bunch on the blog, and we're really excited to have here on the podcast. Chicago's own Austin Vesely. Fuck, I fucked it up. Austin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm glad to be here, and I believe in your capabilities to be a solo man.
Thanks. I appreciate that vote of confidence. I really needed it because the reason my mom is not listening in is because she wasn't willing. I asked her to get my back, and she was like, no. Grow up, and then hung up on me. So your vote of confidence is really exciting to have. So cool, yeah. Thanks for joining us. I mentioned you are Chicago's own, and that means that you're from Chicago. That's what that phrase means. And you direct music videos from Chicago, which is pretty unique. I think you're the first person we've had on this podcast where I could say that about. And so I guess I'd like to start with just like, to get an idea of like what that's like. Is Chicago an awesome place to direct music videos from?
It has been very good to me, just because there's something just really amazing going on musically around here, and has been for years. And basically, you know, being a music video director, you are a part of that. It's a symbiotic relationship. So yeah, it's a really great place, basically due to the artists that are making music here, and also, you know, on the film side of things, just there's a really interesting and amazing young group of filmmakers out here, you know, it's just constantly inspiring to work here, I think.
And we brought you on because you had two music videos come out this week, which is probably something I should have mentioned before I said your name, but whatever. This is my first time alone, so everyone just remember that for this whole hour. But this week you've released two music videos, one for Sunday Candy by Donnie Trumpet and The Social Experiment, and then you also released a music video for Marrow, called Paulson. And both those videos came out this week, and they're both for artists from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And pretty much, you know, you kind of, if you look up and down your page on IMVDB, you know, from Vic Mensa to Chance the Rapper to, you know, Kids These Days, all of these are artists from Chicago. Is that by choice from you, or is it just kind of like there are so many great artists in that area that it's like, why would you work with someone elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, it was just really natural just having been here and gotten to know all those people, you know, to some degree there was like never a need to start looking outward for artists to work with, because there's so many great ones here. But it isn't that I have ruled out, you know, anybody. I've worked with some people from out of town, and I just shot a video over the weekend with an artist from who's based in LA, who's from New York. So you know, that happens more and more, I think, as sort of the name recognition kind of spreads as well.
Sure. And in terms of the artists that you've worked with from Chicago, is it more than just kind of like a working relationship? You've got like a personal relationship with a lot of folks you work with, right?
Yeah, I do, which is really cool. You know, Vic and Chance and the folks in Marrow, you know, who actually three of them used to be in Kids These Days as well. So we all go way back at this point, and, you know, they're some of my best friends. I'm actually at Liam from, you know, Marrow / Kids These Days house right now. So
so he heard you correct the way I said the band name.
No, he didn't. But I figured I was in his space. I had to I'd do something for him.
Well, yeah, no, totally. And I'm going to say like a lot of things wrong. I said your last name wrong. So, yeah, it's going to go down. So you're, I guess, since there's a, you know, Donnie Trumpet video came out this week in which Chance the Rapper is a member of Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment, and you've obviously worked very frequently with Chance. I'd love to kind of just get a sense for where that relationship started. Were you guys kind of friends first, and you were like conscious of him as an artist? How did that go back?
Yeah, that really started as a working thing. You know, we became friends really easily because we just kind of had similar sensibilities about certain things. And but yeah, it started out by I met him on set of my first Vic and Nico video, who Nico is now Donnie Trumpet. So it's all kind of this weird, like, long term thing happening here. But yeah, I met Chance, and immediately the first thing we did was get into you know, doing video stuff together. So you know, that's kind of how we learned about each other and stuff like that, was just by collaborating as artists. But that, you know, led to a great friendship as well.
And you know, it's not hard to kind of tangibly see when you hear an artist who's first starting out and then a couple of years later kind of compare the music that they're doing after that time, and you can kind of see the musical progression. Do you also kind of get a sense of progression from the video side for a lot of these guys?
Totally. I mean, in terms of scale is an obvious one, and I guess that's really it. That, I mean, because, you know, we've always tried to do stuff as creative as we can within the constraints of what we've got. And, you know, sometimes constraints are great because you have to do things in a more innovative or, you know, unique way than you would have. But, you know, basically we have more means now in some cases, and that allows us to let some of our ideas breathe, you know, some stuff that we wouldn't have been able to accomplish before, but maybe we, you know, would have wanted to do. So that's kind of the main, I think, progression.
Yeah, definitely. And so in terms of like the ideas that you guys were doing, you know, the earlier videos and stuff for really anybody, Vic, Chance, you know, any of these bands and guys, you were still kind of just going for whatever ideas you guys came up with and you just try to figure out the ways to do them. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It was like, you know, keep it as creative as possible, and then you know, don't let money or equipment limitations sort of be the guiding thing. You know, you kind of want to, you know, make sure the ideas come first and then figure out, you know, the logistics as you go, and you do it in a cheap way, whether you're shoplifting from Home Depot or whatever it is. But you know, we got it done.
And so that's a real story.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Which video did you do that for?
Man, some kids these days stuff. I won't name my conspirators, but yeah, it seems like every time there was like a kids these days video, there was like some low level petty theft that happened.
Well, that's nice of you to not name names. I think that's very appropriate.
Hey, man, snitches get stitches.
Yeah, exactly. And that is like a rule of the Music Video Chats podcast. And so, right. Yeah, we would cut it out if you did it, because we're not going to let it happen. And a lot of these are, you know, you kind of, it's funny, like, you know, Vic was in Kids These Days, as is, Macy Stewart, who's in Marrow. Chance has solo stuff. He's in Donnie Trumpet. Like, there's a lot of like moving pieces with a lot of these Chicago based artists. Is there, like, I don't know, to kind of like zero it down, like, is there a difference between working on a Chance the Rapper solo video and working on like a Donnie Trumpet video where Chance is kind of a, like, a only one of the players in the band?
Not so much, because, I mean, Chance was like my main collaborator on Sunday Candy, so it kind of felt in a way like a big Chance video, as he's the feature on the track and everything. But we wanted to make sure that it was a Donnie Trumpet video, as you know, in promotion of the upcoming record, which is a Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment record. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of, you know, it's a similar thing. It's like it's a group collaboration, and you know, Chance curates some of the stuff, and that's sort of the way it goes.
And you mentioned you Chance was your main collaborator on the Sunday Candy video. He's listed as one of the writers on the video along with you. Could talk a little bit about just like what that process is like, kind of just coming up with the idea for the video with Chance.
Yeah, so he'd come to me towards the end of last year in the winter, and they were, you know, they wanted to get something going as promo for this record Surf that's coming, and Sunday Candy had kind of come out as a one-off, like just as a little single, and so he was thinking we should do a video for it, and he had been really into like musical theater lately, and he had gone to see The Lion King on Broadway a lot. Like he kept going and taking different friends to go see it, and I never actually got to make it to one of them, unfortunately. But so yeah, he came to me really inspired by that, and you know, he was talking about how he wanted to incorporate some of those elements into his live shows, and then we started talking about doing it as a music video. So he said, you know, I want sets and dancing and stuff like that. So it was kind of, then we would just kind of throw the ball back and forth, and you know, I said, you know, there's a candy store in Chicago called Margie's that has this really nice, like, old school look to it. And I was like, it'd be cool to do something that looks like this. It's real Chicago. Yeah. And then we just kind of went back and forth from there and developed the concept.
And what do you know, like, was it kind of just everything about The Lion King that he was inspired by? Or was there like specific elements that, you know, you guys were looking at specifically from that show?
He was really into the way they utilize space, like with sets and stuff. And I think that's a big thing that translated into what came on screen for our video, was that we had these sort of like, you know, moving set pieces to create different environments over a short period of time. So that was big for him. He really was into costuming, and that just didn't, you know, big, elaborate costuming wasn't really what made sense for this video or anything, but that was something he was really into, and yeah.
And the sets are like crazy impressive, and like that's definitely one of my favorite parts, is like those the moving sets and how things kind of just change into the other and become another. What was the process like of putting that stuff together?
That was so basically I wrote the treatment and wrote it like moment to moment what specifically would be happening, and I then, you know, brought in a production designer named Amanda Brenton, and she was just like, yeah, let's, you know, I didn't realize the scope of what I was like asking them to do right away until, you know, I went and visited them in the shop a couple weeks later and just saw all the stuff and was like, oh my God. But yeah, I brought it to her, and we kind of went over how it would work, you know, logistically to make these things move and stuff like that. And they just went crazy on how, you know, amazing and elaborate they are. The backdrop of the interior candy store is like 30 feet wide and 10 feet tall, and it's hand painted every square inch of it. And it's just like, they blew me away, you know?
And how much role do you have in like kind of giving them direction in specifically the stuff that they're putting on that? Is there a lot, like, are they kind of able to have some freedom with that as well?
They did have some freedom, but Amanda was really good about pushing me to make choices, you know, specific choices. We went and she just like pulled up a bunch of images of real places and said, you know, we decided what the shelves were going to look like. You know, we decided what the color of the stripes on the walls would be, what type of jars would be on the shelves, and, you know, what type of wood grain, you know, we'd kind of want and stuff like that. So, you know, that's stuff I'm usually kind of more big picture or something like that. So it was cool to, you know, refocus on the specific details, and it made all the difference, because once I walked on set and just saw the stuff that we had like drawn out in a little notebook and see it full scale, it was like overwhelmingly awesome.
Because this really seems like a video where a director needs to be very big picture, because there are so many literal moving parts, but also figurative moving parts. And man, that joke was so funny in my head. For the most part, were you kind of making specific choices and like really locking in on kind of all of the elements, or was that kind of specific to the set design?
Yeah, I guess it kind of it went, you know, I guess micro and macro were like I guess are the two things. It's like I would go to a meeting with my DP, and we would start drawing overhead maps of where the Steadicam was going to be at what moment and stuff like that. And those things were really specific, as much as they could be in theory, you know, without actually being in the real space. And same with Michael Apostolos, who did the lighting, and he's like this 19-year-old prodigy who does Chance's live set lighting.
Nice.
And I thought it would be cool to have him like program a show as if it were, you know, a live show. So I went in with him and we decided kind of what our looks were going to be, what sort of accents, you know, would correlate to the music and stuff like that. And so, yeah, there was a lot of micro decisions before I got to the space. And then, you know, on set, that allowed me to be comfortable with being on the macro scale and like just, you know, seeing the video for what it's going to end up being instead of all the little tiny things, right. which I could leave to those department heads to handle because they're all phenomenal.
Right. And to choreograph this video, you had D'Lo and Ian Eastwood, Ian, who is listeners of this podcast would know as the choreographer on the Childish Gambino Sober video directed by Hiro Murai. Were they involved in choreographing the movement of the set as well? Was that part of their role?
The set was mainly me and the art department, like figuring out how that stuff would move. And then Ian sort of moved people around in relation to where set pieces needed to be at what moment. But you know, Ian choreographed everything, you know, like the Chance's entrance into the first scene and his movement over to the bench and what those guys would be doing on the bench and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, he was really great to work with, and he's a Chicago dude as well. So
his role was beyond just like obviously there are like the traditional kind of like dance moments in the video, but yeah, there's obviously a lot of like timing necessary for kind of every piece of it. So at what point was Ian brought onto the project?
I called him. He was one of my first calls actually when we knew we were going to do this sort of thing. So I had been talking to him about it for months, and I don't think we got in a room together until maybe like 5 days before the shoot. But he's so capable, and he's got people behind him that are so capable as well that, you know, as soon as I walked in that day, you know, 5 or 6 days before the shoot and watched what they had been working on, it was like, okay, this is perfect. And so he put together those big numbers, the big dance numbers. And then once we got to set, and we're in the real space, he could help guide based on where I wanted camera to be at what moment and, you know, where the sets were going to be. He guided, you know, what Chance could be doing to keep that interesting all the way.
I'm curious in a video like this, just obviously, because obviously it's a one take video, correct?
Yeah.
You guys like it's actually done in one take?
True one take. Yeah.
True one take. And how many one takes? How many times did you kind of go through it all?
So we had a day of rehearsal where we ran through and we rolled on a couple of those. So there's some like real ugly rehearsal footage that should never be seen. But actually, I mean, it went really, really well. And we probably ran it. I mean, on the day of the shoot, we ran eight full takes and about three or four cut takes where something went wrong early and we just had to reset. But yeah, it was like, it was like eight full takes, and we wrapped early, which blew my mind.
Nice.
Yeah, but I mean, that's that proper preparation prevents poor performance, right?
That's it.
So, you know, having the build day and then the rehearsal day, once we got there on Friday, we were just ready to kill the thing, so it was great.
And were there, like, any, like, unforeseen issues that kind of kept coming up that you kind of had to remedy, or were there, like, three takes that didn't work, just kind of random issues?
A lot of it was like I don't even want to admit it, but it was like really dangerous shit that happened, like, you know, like I said, that 30 foot back wall, it was cloth, but it's really heavy muslin cloth, and it was on 30 feet of speed rail, 10 feet in the air, and we had, you know, like PAs and art department people moving it, so they had to roll that thing out with a pretty good pace, and sometimes a wheel would be locked or something, and that fucking thing almost tipped over.
Nice.
And I mean, it was terrifying every time something like that happened. And
what do you do with all that stuff when you guys are done?
Man, Chance decided he wanted to keep all of it, and I don't know exactly what happened with that, but it's either at Amanda's shop or with Chance in a storage unit or in the trash. So I'm not sure.
Right.
It could be.
Right. I feel like that kind of feels like it's going to be the eventual home for it, one way or another, whether it's in any of those places first. And there's a moment at the very end of the video where obviously the whole video is Steadicam, but then suddenly the Steadicam is up above everybody's head. And yeah. I'm curious how you guys pulled that off.
That was something that was a point of contention for us early on, because basically we were trying to figure out how to do that and how to do it safely and everything. But there was basically just an industrial lift that they used to raise a guy up, a tech to like rig lights and stuff. And we're like, well, how can we get our op on this? Because we really want this crane shot. And we didn't know until I don't know if we even got to do it on rehearsal day or if it was day of, but basically our Steadicam operator, Blaine Baker, he's like fantastic, phenomenal at what he does. He backs into this, he sits down on the platform of this industrial lift and then it gets raised 15 or 20 feet in the air. But it was like an interesting thing, because we had to have a guy guide him to the spot, and then somebody had to be there to like lock him in, you know, as a safety thing, and then a guy up there actually operating it. So it was a big move, but it worked out really nice.
Would you say that's kind of was the most complicated moment of the shoot?
It was a big one. There's a few camera move places where it was just like little communication problems, but yeah, getting him basically from where Jamila Woods was standing in the by herself, you know, kind of spotlit, and then we guide him backward through a group of people to the lift. Yeah, I think that was probably like one of the bigger moments.
And what made you guys go with the take that you went with? Is it just the one that kind of like felt the best?
Yeah, it was like an overall thing. It was like you kind of had to take an inventory of, like, I was shooting with Blaine, the Steadicam op, on a different thing the other day, and he was like, so why'd you use that take? And I was like, well, you know, I thought I liked it the best. And he goes, well, you know, the one before it was better for me, you know? So like everybody's going to have a different, better take, but there was, you know, like performance stuff was really what I had to base it on. Which was a good chance take, you know, because he's kind of the guide throughout the whole piece. So, you know, which is a good dance take, has everything framed well. So, you know, there's glitches in that take, but it was the one that I liked the best and the one that Chance liked the best. So, and it happened to be the last take of the day was the one that we used.
Did you feel it in the moment that was going to be the one, or was it the decision that was made in post?
The official decision was made in post, but on set, I felt like that was it. You know, and it was like a weird moment, because, you know, we nailed it and we kind of just looked around and were like, okay, I guess that's it. You know,
yeah.
we've all been putting our brains into this for weeks and days, and you know, we just had to be like, oh, well, we did it then.
And there's a pretty audible yes at the very end of the video too, which I'm assuming is you.
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, you always do have to look in post, but like I'm always curious if there's like something in the moment as well that you kind of feel, and that yes felt like, you know, very, very, very authentic.
So. Yeah, I was sitting, it was a weird video for me too, because it's a one take and there isn't anything for me to really do throughout the shooting. So I'm sitting on monitor actually watching my video like happen. So, you know, I'm kind of over there on pins and needles and going, yes and yes and oh my God, you know, every time something happens right. So, you know, once that one landed and they hit the bow, it was just like, you know, I was just elated and I shouted.
Yeah, right.
Which I think could have probably was like more of a scary and threatening to people than excited, but.
And obviously the video came out on a Sunday, which that makes sense. But the one thing I really love about the release of this video is that you guys use just like a crew photo as the thumbnail.
Yeah.
For it. Do you know what was behind that decision?
That was me. I just like, we had this photographer, Brian Lamb, come and he took some really nice Polaroids, and that was the moment right before, we actually took the photo right before we said we that's a wrap. So this is just everybody glowing in the moment of like, wow, we just did that take. And I revisit that photo all the time, so I kind of just wanted to revisit it every time I go to the video page, and you know, because just everybody there just made me so happy. Everybody was so committed and having so much fun and was so skilled. I just wanted to, you know, put them on the pedestal there.
Totally. And obviously, as a music video database, it's something that gets us really stoked too. And it's good that people, you know, like, because you know, people always talk about like having to put the right stupid thumbnail in their thing and like making sure that it's going to be something like generates more clicks or whatever people talk about. But like for something that's just such a genuine moment from that day that exists there is like, yeah, super exciting that, that's what you guys went with.
Yeah.
So, obviously we talked about it at the top of the show, in addition to Sunday Candy, you had the Paulson video come out this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so did you know the videos were gonna come out the same week?
I didn't. We'd been sitting on the Marrow thing for like a pretty long time. We shot the outdoor scenes in either July or August of last year.
Wow.
And basically because they didn't know when they were going to put it out, but they wanted to get the weather before Chicago and the general surrounding area turned to nightmarish winter hell. So we went out and shot that, and then I shot the parts with Liam in the fat suit like in I think December. So it's been done for a long time. So I was just they've been working with a publicist, and so it was someone external kind of making decisions. So we didn't know it was going to come out until the night before. I was with Liam, and he goes, "Oh, Paulson's coming out tomorrow at noon." And I was like, "Okay, 2 in 1 week, nice. Right on."
Right. And the concept of the video is kind of like a 90s style exercise video that's contained within this like larger narrative. That's this like weird. Like love story / attack story, and there's a lot of violence. I wonder if you could talk about where the concept of this video came from.
Yeah, so initially the band came to me with the original idea of Liam in the fat suit watching an exercise video where these people all get murdered, and like I was like, "There's something wrong with you guys." So I basically took that and wrote it, you know, in a specific way. And, you know, the love backstory thing didn't come up till much later when I was shooting Liam's parts and we had to motivate him having the tape and stuff like that. So, yeah, there was a lot of specifics that I kind of added and tried to add my own flair and obviously my own look to it. But it was originally, I think, Macy Stewart and Liam Cunningham came up with it.
And did you guys shoot the VHS stuff like on actual on video?
No, I did it on a Canon T2i and then like treated it in After Effects.
And the video is it's very like obviously it's hilarious and kind of absurd and ridiculous. But kind of before we move on to talking about some other videos, I wanted to make sure to talk about one of my favorite short films ever, and that's Sex Tape Day.
Oh,
which is obviously also very funny, and it's a film that you made, but also are featured in very heavily.
Yeah,
and I just wanted to like, is that kind of being in front of the camera something that you're looking to explore as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've always wanted to do, and that was like kind of the first stuff that got me into making videos and deciding that it was what I wanted to do for real. Like in high school, was making. Like class projects and stuff like that, that I would be the only guy in. I'd shoot him in my basement or whatever. And once, you know, when I would get a laugh out of people from making a video, I was like, okay, I can do this now. So yeah, I'm really into it. Somebody sent me a casting call thing the other day for a thing that they're doing. They want me and Nathan Salter, my director of photography, to be in this movie. And
so they came to you directly to be in their movie.
Yeah, I think I would probably do it if
nice.
If it seemed like I could do a good job at it. You know, if I was certain. It, you know, basically if I could be a goofball, because that's essentially what I'm best at.
Right. Yeah. And are you and Aaron working on something else? A follow up to Sex Tape Day.
We've talked about it quite a bit. There was something that we were going to do last summer that fell through where we were going to be those same kind of versions of ourselves, like house hunting, and we were going to have this absurd realtor. But that didn't happen, but I'm not ruling it out. But Aaron and I actually have a music video that should be coming out in a couple weeks here.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll look out for that. And what about Handsome Boy? Is that something that I'm going to see a full version of?
I hope so, man. Another one. I was just like, I was so bored. I didn't have any practice, so I just started putting myself, making myself look like an idiot for the enjoyment of others. And I titled the blog to a short film. And we were actually going to do it. I was going to this guy Frank Otero, and then he had to move to Nashville for a job, and it fell apart, and I started touring with Chance, and it kind of went away. But we're thinking about putting Hanson in a Chance video at some point, so he will live.
Nice. That would be fantastic. And is that something that, in terms of like that kind of comedy sensibility, you like, is that something that you're hoping to kind of get into your music video work as well?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, I guess not the right thing hasn't come along to put that stuff in, but I can't wait for when it feels right, because, you know, doing stuff like Paulson is so fun, you know, because it's just absurd and goofballery. That's basically what I live for, absurdity and goofballery.
Nice, totally.
That could be the subtitle of this podcast.
Totally. I think it fits. So anyone listening, if they would like to see any of the music videos that we've just talked about, you go to imvdb.com/podcasts, and there you'll see episode 4 of the Music Video Chats podcast, and you'll see a bunch of links. You'll see a link to Austin's IMVDB page, probably his Twitter account. You give them a follow, maybe other links, Instagram or something, whatever you want to find. That'll be there, along with a list of all the music videos that we talked about, and you can watch them and enjoy them as much as you like, because that's how the internet works. But Austin, in addition to some of the music videos that you've made on this podcast, we like to have our guests talk about some other music videos that they love, but that they didn't make. And you've come with a list upon our request. And I'd love to chat about some of those if you're into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet.
I just reviewed all of them again before we went on, so I'm ready.
So admittedly, and I think this might be a fun place to start, admittedly, you sent me a link to a Blue Can Trail Hit 'Em Up Style music video that I couldn't find. It was gone on the internet after you sent me the link, but I think we could still do this, because I really would love to hear about what goes on in this video, and maybe if you could compare it to the one that is still available online, and tell me what makes them different, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so it's oh damn it, I wish you could have seen it.
I guess this
joke isn't as funny without the visuals. It's like, it's three girls who made a homemade video of the Blue Can Trail song. They're lip syncing to it, and they're it looks like they're in like a college dorm apartment or something, and it just is everything I love about the internet and the democratization of art.
Because it's got like you, because it was there. You sent me a link that was working when you sent it, correct?
Yeah.
One day later, and the internet gods have removed it, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. And we'll find it again. So are you a fan of the OG actual official Hit 'Em Up Style music video?
I started watching Hit 'Em Up Style, the real one, after this. And the funny thing, too, is that this one that I sent you is titled Blue Cantrell Hit 'Em Up Style Official Video. Right. It is not.
No. Okay. I was a little confused, because I was like, why don't I know that there's two of these?
Yeah.
I was a little confused. But that's exciting.
It's a great experiment, because there's comments on there that are like, some people are like, you know, don't quit your day job, and some people are like, hey, I keep going, guys, and it's just it's a YouTube masterpiece.
Well, the fact that it says official music video, I'm assuming is the reason why you're even conscious of it, right? Like,
right.
That's a trick that works on the internet, unfortunately. And the you know, YouTube and Vimeo are overrun with fakers like that, and they you know, there are things in place that to try to weed that stuff out, but you can never get to it all, so I'm not even really sure why those things exist. But we're going to find that video. That video will be linked in these show notes. That I can guarantee. But maybe we should move on to then some of the other videos that you have that I definitely have seen and are familiar and are available. I think we should go to Thriller, right? That you
absolutely.
You brought Michael Jackson Thriller from 1982, directed by John Landis up, which is you know, one of the most like adored and recognizable music videos, I think, that there is. Yeah. Is this video very impactful for you?
Huge, because basically when I was little, I don't know what led my parents to the choices they made of VHS purchases, if they just liked Michael Jackson or what, but they made a bunch of VHS purchases when I was a kid that were hugely influential on who I am today. And one of them happened to be Michael Jackson History, the video hits.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it was a VHS of just all of those amazing Michael Jackson videos that, you know, the Bad, I think, was done by Scorsese, and you know, Remember the Time is huge. But Thriller was like the greatest thing I'd ever seen at age 5. It kind of introduced me to what a music video even was. And it's this big crossover between film, short film and music video. And you've got the greatest performer of all time in there. And, you know, directed by John Landis, who I think did like Blues Brothers or something the same year he did Thriller. It's just like, it's a really amazing piece. And it happened to be like the first thing that brought me into the world of music videos. So I think that was a heavy influence, or remains a heavy influence on some choices I make.
I think the thing about what makes Thriller such an amazing music video is that it's kind of bulletproof. Like, stuff that exists from the early 80s is like so easy to kind of write off and be like, yeah, people loved it then because people from the 80s were dumb or like just didn't know like what could be good. And, you know, it's like so easy to try to be like a contrarian with stuff from that era.
Yeah.
And you look back and you watch Thriller and you're like, you know what, I can't be a dick right now. Like, this is kind of undeniable. Like,
yeah,
it's never going to be. Like, it's always going to be great. It's one of those music videos that's always going to be great. And even as dated as, like, some of the elements might get, I think some of that, though, comes from, like, what makes it timeless is, like, the practicality of the whole thing as well. It's, like, a lot of very practical effects. And, like, they didn't try to, like, shove Michael Jackson in a green screen in some, like, cartoon world or something. Like, you know, I feel like kind of tangible in-camera effects always have a longer shelf life.
Yeah,
and this video's full of them.
The makeup people were incredible. Like those monsters. I just watched it 20 minutes ago before we got on the call. It, like, those are still scary. Like
right.
Those could be in a movie now and would look great.
Right. It's pretty amazing. Like, with the difference of, you know, just like changing the eyes and that kind of stuff, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
And definitely like a very timeless, undeniable music video for sure.
I couldn't believe too, rewatching it, like how many, there's the film within a film, then there's like they pull the rug out from you like another 3 or 4 times with Michael becoming a zombie, not being a zombie, Vincent Price is doing a talk down in the middle of it. and then the ending, of course, where it's like, oh, it was just a dream, or was it?
Right, and like the look directly into the camera lens, like,
yeah,
moment. But then all throughout that you still get like so many traditional awesome music video moments, like with the dance off and like all of that stuff, where like all of that, you know, it's still super entertaining as well. And
yeah,
you know, how could it not be in a Michael Jackson music video? But definitely one of the best. I think you brought 2 Fiona Apple videos to the table. And I guess before we talk about them specifically, why 2 Fiona Apple videos?
It's kind of weird because it isn't so much about Fiona Apple as it is about the videos themselves. But I do love Fiona Apple as an artist too. But the first one I listed was Criminal, which I remember seeing when I was younger. And it's a video that anytime someone asks me, like, what's a great music video, for some reason Criminal comes to mind. And I'm not sure why it is. I think it's, there's something about it that it's like, it's just a performance video, but it's like, it's this like weird lighting scenario they did where everything's lit like a disposable flash photo. And there's this like little red eye look, but it's really simple. Fiona Apple is a great song.
Right.
And then there's like this crazy, crazy sexual energy throughout the whole thing. And it's just like, I don't know, it leaves an impression, and it has on me for years.
Totally. This video came out when I was 12 years old, and I remember, like, at 12 years old, a woman in underwear would have been just, like, the greatest thing that exists. And I remember, like, being super into this video, but it also like really confused me about so many things about life. It just like was like a little troubling, but also like a thing that I really, really wanted to look at. And it's one of those videos that like has been around for almost my whole life. And just like every year that goes by, I feel like I understand it a little bit more and like understand my feelings towards it a little bit more. And yeah, like, just
it's funny that you said troubling, because I was thinking that when I was rewatching it today. It was, there's something almost like she's like a captive or something. Like there's these weird undertones of what's going on in that video. And, you know, it's, so it raises questions and it's a mystery.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, it's the type of thing that like at 12 years old, if I tried to ask my parents if this video is on MTV and I was like, Mom, what is this? It would be the type of thing would just have them take MTV away from me. Like it's not a video that like a parent of a 12-year-old is ready to like break down, because I feel like they, most parents would lack the capacity to even like explain what they're watching. Cause it's like, yeah, like people are just like laying all over the house, like laundry almost. And like to explain what gets a person in that state, when it's not like abundantly clear, right? Like it could be a lot of things. And
Yeah,
I think it's a lot of that stuff that's like what's made this video also like super iconic. Because Fiona Apple is like a very captivating video performer, and it could be something super stripped back and she'd still be great. But yeah, there's definitely like a lot more like beneath the surface in this video that's always fun to kind of try to dig out.
Yeah, strong images, man.
Yeah, totally. And so what's the other Fiona video that you brought to us?
So the other one is a Beatles cover of Across the Universe, and I think it has something, it's related to the Pleasantville movie, or maybe it just looks like that. I forgot to check, but
well, I think maybe this was on the Pleasantville soundtrack.
Yeah
here it is. On Across the Universe is from the Pleasantville soundtrack.
Cool, so that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
So P.T. Anderson did this one, and P.T. Anderson is like essentially my living god,
right?
When it comes to film. So there's that, and then there's just like there's so much trickery in this video that I can't quite understand, in the same way that there was some of the same trickery in Birdman that I couldn't understand. But like, you know, just passing mirrors and stuff like that, that's just so well executed. Passing mirrors with camera, I mean. And there's like this, everything seems to be in slow-mo, and I can't really tell if Fiona's in slow-mo too, or if she's masked in, and then all of a sudden she and the camera do a 360 upside-down thing, and it's just a really, and there's just movement and shit exploding, and like, it's just great looking and really energetic for a song that is like kind of in the cut, laid back. And I can't imagine being in the art department and having to reset that damn thing every time.
Yeah, right. I the idea of her being maybe not actually in camera is something I think about a lot with this video too. Because kind of the concept is she's like framed in the front, and then everything's kind of soft behind her as like this kind of chaos is kind of unfolding as
and
she moves through.
Gives them leverage to do that cleaner too.
But yeah, absolutely. But like just in terms of the look of her, it doesn't look like the only reason you kind of think that maybe she's not actually there is because of how complicated it is. It doesn't it certainly doesn't look like she's been placed in there. It's very clean if it is an effect. I think the interesting thing about this video, I think P.T. Anderson is a director that a lot of people kind of forget has roots in music videos.
Yeah.
You know, like there are the filmmakers who I think will never be able to escape their music videos. Like I think like Gondry and Spike Jonze are guys that like are always going to be remembered for their music videos too. And to like a lesser extent, you know, Romanek and Fincher as well, like have very heavy roots. But like, I feel like Paul Thomas Anderson, for whatever reason, like his music video roots aren't quite as pronounced. And I think he's somebody that like people will often forget has like a pretty significant music video catalog as well.
Yeah, I think the difference mainly would be that he started his like feature film career first, and then did the, so it sets him apart from the Finchers and everything. But
totally.
And also his films are just so damn powerful that you wouldn't even be looking in anywhere else for art from that guy, you know?
Sure, definitely. And I do think there's also kind of a separation in just what the video what his music videos are like and what his films are like. You could really see the like there was a video like a film essay uploaded to Vimeo not too long ago about David Fincher's style, and it starts in his music videos because you can see where that where a lot of that stuff is coming from. And you know, P.T. Anderson's music video work and his film work aren't quite so in line as some of these other directors. So you got one more for us, and it's a very popular video on this podcast. It's one of our favorite videos, definitely from the last couple of years. And that's "Never Catch Me" by Flying Lotus featuring Kendrick Lamar, directed by Hiro Murai.
so this video to me, and I tweeted it to Hero the other day, to me it's just like the high watermark of music videos. I don't know, there's something, it's so like perfect to me. It's filmic and beautiful, but then there's the dance, you know, to keep to tie it to the music video world, and just it's gorgeous imagery. It's just like about, I always feel kind of like I don't need to be doing music videos because this man has it covered.
Like, Hero's got it for
Yeah,
sure.
it's like, you know what? This guy, just let him continue to take flight. He's got this thing down.
Yeah,
But
right. As long as the Hero's making music videos are in an okay place.
yeah.
That's for sure. And yeah, it does. It has like a lot of those like there are a lot of things that kind of anchor it in the music video world and keep it in like a music video style. But it also like I love the way that it kind of has a message, but it's definitely not heavy-handed with that message. And it's a lot more like celebratory in nature as well. Like there's just dancing is often done as a celebration, and like that exists kind of in the dancing that these kids are doing in this video, which you know offers this like really like bittersweet feeling throughout the whole thing.
To me, it was like it, and it came out, you know, in a time where it, you know, probably wasn't, it might not have been intentional that it came out during that time, but during, you know, particular times of unrest in the United States, and also being in Chicago, those are issues that really never go out of sight. So having like two young black kids like basically escaping death and doing it in the most vital way, which is this beautiful dance, you know, was just like, it was just like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, you know, and I was real sensitive to it at the time. So
It's hard to think that like the current kind of climate that we're in wasn't present in mind. I know Hiro did a director commentary for this video for us, and he mentioned that the idea came from kind of like the seed of the idea came from Flying Lotus, where the kind of the initial idea was that it was going to be a young black boy late to his own funeral. And is that concept like that seed of an idea that kind of developed into what it is now? So it's hard to imagine that like yeah, like the kind of current climate wasn't in front of everybody's mind while making this video.
Yeah, Flylo, I think, and he had that beautiful Khalil Joseph video a couple years ago, Until the Quiet Comes, which had some similar themes to it, you know, sort of the death in reverse thing there. So yeah, I think it probably was intentional.
Yeah, and this Flying Lotus album, you know, You're Dead, is very interesting too because it's deals with like a lot of very dark subject matter, but it's not like a grim album. Even though what it's dealing with is kind of grim, like you compare it to like the Earl Sweatshirt video or Earl Sweatshirt album that just came out that Hiro Murai also is a frequent collaborator with, where it's a very dark feeling album in addition to the subject matter. I don't think that the You're Dead album feels quite as dark. And I think that translates into this video really well. It's definitely like got some darker elements, but you know, it's really balanced.
Yeah, the big transitional moment where they're running down the little like garage hall or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're outside in that beautiful sunny day. It kind of lifts the video.
Yeah, it's one of the best. I agree with the high watermark statement 100%. This is definitely, I think we had it in our top three music videos from last year.
Yeah.
It's right up there at the top for sure. Yeah. So yeah, I'm always stoked to talk about that one. Sweet. I think we did it. I think we made it through a podcast together.
And you did it all by yourself.
Well, I feel like I had a lot of great support. We're going to talk about a lot of great stuff. I could feel just your belief in my abilities throughout the hour, which means a lot.
This was actually, for everybody at home, this was actually a video conference. I was just writing Doug notes of encouragement and
holding stuff up and you could see the single tear kind of going down at the beginning, but you really turned that around quick, which is very good. And thanks for also not judging me for having no shirt on, but whatever.
You can do it. It's your world.
Totally. I mean, if I cannot wear a shirt in my own living room, where can I not wear one?
Right. This is America.
This is America. Great point. So again, anyone listening wants to see the videos we talked about, wants to be able to follow Austin on Twitter, any of those things, go to imvdb.com/podcast and look for episode 4 of the Video Chats podcast, and there you'll see it. And Austin, thanks again for joining me, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Doug.
And we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks. Must be the money. If you wanna know-